rocks, a glass house. Now that sounds like a disaster in the making, unless it's under rocks and a trip to one of the world's architectural gems right here in Northern Illinois. Welcome to Under Rocks. I'm Susan Stevens. Spencer Tritt, Jason Kregear, Austin Cliff, and I headed to Plano, where you can find a mid-century masterpiece in the woods, just 100 feet off the banks of the Fox River. This modernist dream built of glass and steel was commissioned by Edith Farnsworth and designed and built by Ludwig Mies van der Rohe. Farnsworth's weekend retreat for one is now a museum with a story to tell. And our guide, John Palmateer, is just the one to tell it. So come on, hop in. Our tour of the Edith Farnsworth house is just getting underway.
Yeah, you'd think before going into the all-white house, you wouldn't want to be walking on the muddy path.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
Welcome to Farnsworth.
Hey.
We are going to ask you to take your shoes off, please.
Absolutely.
My name is John Palmateer. I've been a docent at the home for 16 years. And I'm currently taking over special events, weddings, and those types of things. A lot of people don't realize that the home is for use. You can do a wedding here. You can do a baby shower here. You can have dinner for eight. You could have a small, intimate concert, you know, a pianist, and invite friends. So,
Jenna, Christmas party idea.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And we do special events around Christmas. The home gets decorated, and we have special evening cocktail parties where you can attend and spend time and enjoy the house and just relax and everything during the holidays. So we do that as well. Anything to bring people out, new people who haven't experienced the house, who don't know. There are so many people who live in this area who grew up and have no idea either the house is here or they have no idea about it other than it's a glass house.
So how did this influence modern architecture going forward?
Well, this is basically the start of what we're seeing in the modern architecture age. Mies has come to the United States. He now has new materials available to him, steel and glass. So his construction models kind of change in that direction. But this is probably, when you think about mid-century modern, or you think about an international style home, this is considered the finest example of that type of architecture that's available. So the site was, as you can see still, beautifully wooded. Lots of natural grasses and trees and plants were growing on the area. So Mies' intention with our glass house is that nature was too beautiful. You were surrounded by nature. So why close out that nature? Let that nature come into you and let that be a portion of the house. So that is why we are, that's why the house was made of glass. Besides, as I said, Mies is getting into those materials at that time of steel and glass. And so this is, you know, the arbiter of most of what's to come. There's a glass house, which is in New Canaan, Connecticut, which everyone thinks when they think glass house, but this house was actually designed prior to the glass house in New Canaan, Connecticut. Peter's house is actually based off of this home. Our home takes construction between 1949 and 1951. The glass house was built in 1 year. So it's a completely different project, not as much time and effort going into it, not as much attention to the details. But a lot of times people will think, oh, the glass house, and they think they don't realize that this is not the glass house.
And Mies van der Rohe is known for, you know, skyscrapers in Chicago. Did he do a lot of private homes?
Mies only did 16 residential properties. 13 of those were in Europe. 3 were in the United States.
Wow, only 3 in the United States.
So the first one is the Farnsworth House. The second is a home called the McCormick Home, which is part of the Elmhurst Art Museum. And then the only current private Miesian residency is outside of New Canaan, Connecticut, and that is the Greenwald Home. And that was originally designed for the brother of Morris Greenwald, Mies' major financier for all of his projects, 860, 880, the promenade, all of those.
I'm glad you mentioned it's someone named Greenwald. I thought it was Greenwald.
Oh, no,
okay,
Greenwald.
Gotcha.
Morris, unfortunately, Mies' major financier died in a plane crash, very young, and so his money kind of, that's why his projects kind of wind down at that point, because his major financier has passed away and he no longer has access to all of those funds.
So how many close calls have there been with floods here of this possibly going away? Because we're literally a stone's throw
away from
the Fox River.
You're 100 feet from the Fox River. Over the course of its life, there have been 9 floods. 3 of them are what we call significant floods, or interior floods, which means it didn't just flood the property, it came to the interior of the house. The very first flood, interiorly, is 1954, shortly after Dr. Farnsworth moved in. The most significant and damaging flood is 1996, 18 inches of water in 20 hours. The house sustains a flood height of 5 feet of water to the interior of the home. The home is filled with water. It's almost 3 weeks before the water recedes till they can get in to actually start accessing the damage. At that point, the entire center core was destroyed. It had to be removed, reconstructed from the ground up. And then the most expensive piece, all new Primavera veneers for the core of the home. Primavera is an endangered species currently. And it is still, if purchasable, would be one of the most expensive wood you would encounter. That's the quality of the materials that Mies like to use. The last flood of an interior nature is 2008. That was 2 feet of water to the interior of the home. You're actually gonna, you can actually see some of that flood damage on the doors here, on the lower portion. We believe this is a combination between, a reaction between the glue that holds the veneer on and the river water. So it kind of had a reaction that created this, you know, these terrible stains. They're on both of the bathroom doors. Because after Peter had his flood, the core was redesigned so that all of these three large pieces, three pieces on the other end, and all of the panels across the core are now removable. So in the event of a flood, we can actually lift all of that off so that it doesn't affect the wood. Unfortunately, the door and what's called the wing still sit in water. Wow. Now, the base behind this is marine-grade plywood, so it's designed to push moisture away. So the panels here did very well. The door is a solid piece of wood with a veneer, so of course, got a lot of moisture to hold on and be drawn into the wood product.
So we should describe what the layout here, because when you're saying the core, obviously this space is not set up like a normal house. There's no walls dividing the spaces. It's totally, totally different. Tell us a little bit about Mies's concept here and the layout of this house.
So the home has basically 4 different zones to it. It's a large rectangular space, 1,585 square feet. So that's a standard 3-bedroom ranch home. But this is one room, like you said. So in the very center of the home, offset is what's called the core. The core holds the bathrooms, the kitchen, and the fireplace. On the east end of the home, you have a study area and a dining room. As you transition toward the south exposure of the home, you have a living room area surrounding the hearth. At the east end of the home, you have the bed and the private bathroom. On the north side of the home, the kitchen. So the home is in a circular fashion. So there's a center core, and then you can rotate around the home in any fashion. The thing, though, is nothing is absolutely defined. There is no reason you can't move that dining room table over here and move the desk over there. The concept also being that as the seasons change, your wallpaper, the outside changes. Maybe you prefer to eat breakfast in this corner when that's happening because you have a better view out here. So there's an ability to manipulate the home to meet whatever needs you have at that particular time. It was designed for a single occupant. It is designed for relaxation, comfort, contemplation. Edith loved to write poetry. She wrote a lot of poetry here. She was a classically trained violinist. She practiced her violin here. This was a place that she could get away from all of the hassles of the city and just relax and enjoy herself.
Oh, this would be on my all-time list of places to drink a scotch and just lose time and space.
I absolutely agree. I don't know if I go with the scotch, but other than that, maybe brandy. But hey, it is a beautiful contemplative space if you occupy the space without a lot of people. It takes about a half hour you will naturally start to feel stress kind of move itself away. The walls that are already transparent become removable. You don't even notice the glass. It's just, you're just in a raised pavilion surrounded by everything in nature.
A big snowstorm out here must be one of the most incredible things to view from this house.
It is one of the best times to be in the house. It rarely happens that you're actually in the house and it's snowing. But the grounds are incredible in the winter when they're covered with a blanket of snow. The White House against the white snow is absolutely incredible. I describe that experience to people as being in a reverse snow globe. Instead of you being outside and you're looking at the snow swirling around here, you're actually in the globe and the snow is swirling around you. So to me, it has an effect of being like a reverse snow globe when it's snowing at that point.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it has that really interesting effect to it. So the house, I feel, the best time to experience a home as how it works well is when, not on a beautiful sunny day, but maybe on a rainy day, or maybe when there's snow on the ground, or, you know, you get, it has a different feeling to it. You actually feel the use of the house and how the house allows you to sit and just enjoy what's surrounding you in this nature. Obviously, unfortunately, a road was put in along the western border. That caused Edith to sell because her property extended 2 acres farther to the west. So she had nothing to contend with at all. But the installation of this new road was when she decided it was time to part with her house.
John, so how did you find out about this opportunity to be here for you as a docent? I mean, how did you get into this?
By mistake. About 16 years ago, my brother had a campsite very close to here. And as a child, we would come past the house. I know it was here. I grew up in Aurora. The house is always there. So it's one of those things where I kept saying, I'm going to go look at that. I'm going to go look at that. You never do it, do you? You go to Paris and look at stuff, but you never go in your backyard and look at anything. So I said, you know what, I'm passing, I'm going to stop. So I went online, I noticed they were looking for docents. And I was kind of looking for a little bit of activity, something to just, you know, keep me going and stuff. I came out, talked to the director at that time, and I had intended to stay maybe 3 or 4 years. And that was 16 years ago. So currently, I'm the longest serving docent at the house. Ironically, I actually have more time here than the directors and stuff, because of course they're new, they come from different houses, that's not unusual. So I just kind of stumbled on it. I will give the caveat that I did start out life as a high school history teacher, so this was kind of a natural type of thing for me, so it's not like out of the blue.
Yeah.
But I got hooked on our guests. Our guests come from all over the country. On any given Sunday, I am speaking to people from 3 or 4 different countries. Especially now, it's interesting to hear that perspective from the foreign travelers that, you know, are coming to the country and things like that. So we really do have, it's just this fascination that at any point I could be talking to someone from any given country at any given Sunday. I just don't know who's going to pop up and what we're going to talk about.
And we knew you were a pro when we walked. One of the first things you told us was about how the windows don't fog up.
Uh-huh.
So you get a lot of basic questions. I bet that's one of them.
Sure.
Another one probably answered by what's right behind you, which is where people use the bathroom. What are some of the big questions?
Oh, sure. So the bathrooms are interesting just because of the fact that you don't see them. Usually when the home is photographed, you never photograph the bathrooms. So the home actually, ironically, for a single room home, has 2 bathrooms in the house, which is quite unusual for that. So this is considered what's called the guest bathroom. So the guest bathroom is identical to Ia's. Now, everything in the home is original except for the toilets. Toilets had to be replaced. They weren't working any longer. They had to go. We still own them. Our hope is one day to retrofit them so we can return the original toilet to the house, but it is a low profile, just like the original, and it's from the same manufacturer as the original. So we tried as close to, you know, match them up as possible. The difference in this room is that instead of a bathtub, there's actually a sunken shower right here. So this served 2 purposes. One purpose is Edith had Miss Amy, her poodle, and she would run around the property, and it's dirty. So when Miss Amy came in, Edith would bring her directly to the sunken shower so she could rinse her all off, and then Miss Amy could go run around the house. The architectural reason is clearance is necessary along the floor in the guest bathroom. Mies needs to hide an entrance in this bathroom. He's going to hide that entrance in the shower.
Wow.
And that is going to show you all of the interior
mechanical components. Wow.
So,
okay.
Currently, anything in here that's painted white. So, this is the radiant floor heat, the copper tubing that supplies radiant floor heat. This large round tube here in the center is how the roof is drained. The roof actually is not flat. It's slanted, so it drains toward the center.
Yeah. You didn't make the Frank Lloyd Wright mistake.
No, so water comes in and then goes down through what's called the umbilical cord. And then this actually is the entire fireplace, which is hidden in the living room. So you can see the entire fireplace, but by using a concept of positive and negative space, Mies is allowed to hide that chimney and remove it from your sight at all.
Wow. Now, whenever you have an electrician or plumber out here and they go in there, do they go,
well,
where do I put my tools?
Luckily, we have people we've been using for a number of years, so they're used to it. I will tell you, though, if it's a major project, sometimes plumbing has to be removed so the electrician can do his job, and then the plumber would have to come in and reconnect those types of things. It is a very tight space, obviously. Not a lot of room to work in. But he's trying to hide an entire mechanical system for a house in a very small little area to open the house up as much as possible.
The blueprint on this originally must have been wild.
Okay, so that's another thing. There was no blueprint for the home. The blueprints are done after the home is constructed. Mies is not only architect, but he was general contractor. So Mies would design a particular unit, whether you're doing the corner of the house or what you're working on, that's what you would work off of. There were no definitive full blueprints done until after the home was completed because Mies was doing this as he's designing the home. This is a custom piece. So it's not like the house that you would just have regularly. Everything had to be unique. 5,000 hours of design on the house. 860, 880, the twin Mies Towers in downtown Chicago, only 2,000 hours of design.
Whoa, okay.
So this is where you're seeing all these incredible details. Look in the bathroom, the corners, perfectly inverted corners in the bathrooms. Now you see no hinges on any door in this house because he's used sauce hinges, which hide in the door jamb, so you don't have hinges on the inside of the door or the outside of the door to keep these nice, straight, clean lines.
It still looks so modern today, almost 75 years later.
And that's the ironic piece, is it appears as though this could have been built 2 days ago or three days ago. It doesn't seem like, the house is, we're coming up to 75 years. And, it's like any other modern house you have. So let's go around. Go ahead.
How do you get that sink? I would be
this
in
is,
heaven.
That is amazing. You can now get those.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, a lot of places don't because it's, people are going kind of retro and stuff like that. You have to look. But that's a Kohler sink.
Oh,
so, like I said, these are natural products that were around in the area.
Okay.
So the kitchen is a galley kitchen, obviously. It's also the shortest point in the home. It's only 4 feet from the exterior wall to the countertop. Originally, there were two refrigerators, a dishwasher, and two ovens. When Peter had to repair the cord due to his flood, he removed the second oven and removed the dishwasher, mainly because parts couldn't be located. They were too old at that point. Then he put in a sub-zero freezer, sub-zero refrigerator, and then custom cabinets to fill those spaces that were removed. This lower set, the stainless steel countertop, which is a single sheet, if there's no mold to it, and the lower set of cabinets are also the same things used at 860-880 Lakeshore. So 860-880 is being done at the same time the Farnsworth house is done. So there are a lot of aspects between those two buildings that are used in both of them. Mies would explain this. Basically, this house is one of the apartment units that have been pulled out of 860 and then placed on the ground. We'll go around this way. This is the bedroom area of the home. Originally, Edith had a mattress next to the fireplace in the living room. The wardrobe, this is called the wardrobe. It's a controversial piece. Mies really didn't want this in the area. He also said that if we're going to build it, let's build it at like 5 foot in height so you can see over top of it.
Because he thought it was blocking.
You're blocking the view. Edith is 6 feet tall. So she insisted the wardrobe be elevated to the height of 6 feet. At 6 feet now, it's kind of a barrier or a wall as compared to a piece of furniture because Edith's insistence that she not be seen when standing behind it.
Okay.
So, and this is not an original. This was later on after you know fights and fights with Mies about storage in the home. The storage in the home is in the kitchen. That's where you're supposed to put. There's for one person. There is an extensive amount of storage in the kitchen. Also, this is a weekend place. You're not supposed to have an entire wardrobe. You should keep a couple of things here. Edith refused to ever put clothes in the kitchen. The acquiescence was the wardrobe.
And this was custom built?
This is custom built, designed by, under Mies' direction, because at that time Mies and Edith weren't talking, so Mies didn't want Edith to know that he was working on it. It was done by him and William Dunlap. And then the carpenter is Carl Frund. He did all the original woodwork. The cabinet is designed at his workshop on the North Shore and then brought out here, and it had to be assembled in the home because of the immense weight of the actual wardrobe once it's finished. They had no way of elevating it up into the house at that point. So the only way to do it was to actually construct it inside of the house itself.
And you mentioned there, too, that's one thing we should touch on maybe briefly, is they did the relationship between Edith and Mies went downhill towards the end.
It did. In the beginning, this is a joint venture. There's not even talk about his fees as an architect. Edith even said that, you know, why don't we arrange it so that you can spend some weekends in the house and I can spend some weekends in the house.
Oh, wow.
It was a joint project between a man who had a concept, an idea, and a woman who was advanced and intellectual enough to realize the unique aspect of that and to be able to help fund it. Edith felt this was a project between Edith and Mies. This wasn't Mies designing her home. She's in the office. She goes to his atelier many, many times. They talk about handles. They talk about doorknobs. So, I mean, she's very integrated into the actual construction. Unfortunately, so between 1949 and 1951, the home is being designed and constructed. Construction actually begins in 1949. It finishes in 1951. Mies designs the house in 1946. So we have a long period between the actual concept of the house and its actual completion to the site. During that time, Mies and Edith have a great relationship. They have dinners together. They talk about philosophy. They trade books on philosophy. They have major discussions. Unfortunately, once the home starts to be constructed, Mies' attention shifts to the construction and the home. He is no longer paying all of the attention to Edith. This is not sitting well with Edith. This was supposed to be a joint project. So why am I like being pushed to the side at this point? Probably the point that made it, that explains this the best, is when the home was basically completed, Mies asked Edith to go stand on the upper terrace of the home. So Edith is like, finally, you know, the house is done. I'm with it. He's there. She stands there for a few minutes, and then Mies told her, oh, you can move. I was just checking perspective. So, you know, again, she's like, well, what about me? It's my house. I paid for it. What's going on with me? And unfortunately, over the years, Edith's history got pushed to the side, and it was all Mies. We're trying to reverse that. We're trying to bring back the whole process. This was a woman in the 50s who went against society. She was born into a socialite family. She did not become a debutante. She did not, you know, marry and have children. She went out on her own. She studied violin in Italy. She traveled Europe. She had a degree from the University of Chicago. She had a degree from the conservatory. When none of this is happening, Edith then decides, I think I'll become a doctor. So at Northwestern, there's only 5 women in that medical class. So again, this is very unique. This is a woman who's not going by convention. She's building her own house. You're gonna do that? That's something a man does. Man, women don't do this. You don't wear dresses? Why don't you wear dresses? Why are you in slacks? Women wear dresses. She was way ahead of her time, exceptionally ahead, which is why I think you see the house this way. Her vision was farther than what you might have seen at that particular point.
I was going to say, in his defense, he probably never sat in on her doctor's appointments. You know, it's kind of like,
you know, okay, so here's another good one. That's a very good point. There was, Edith called me. She was complaining about, the workmen complaining about the size of the gravel. And she called Niece and was complaining about it. And Niece actually told her, Edith, you worry about your patients. I'm the architect. I'll worry about the house.
Okay.
So, again, this very clear kind of distinction, you know, I got it. You don't worry about that type of stuff. That's me. You're a doctor. You go play doctor. I'm the architect. I'm the person that'll take care of the house.
Okay, I'm not defending him about that.
I don't think you can, if you look at it, I think the blame is equal between the two of them. I don't think it was one or the other.
Two stubborn, high-powered job people.
Brilliant.
Brilliant, who... You know, like I said, when they're together socially, it's philosophy. They're talking about different types of philosophers and everything. So this is, you know, this is not just, you know, a side conversation. These two people, you know, were very heavily involved for a number of years with each other. Unfortunately, once the house was finished, Meese never returns to the house. He finds it too painful. When the house was for sale, Meese was in the latter years of his life, actually the latter months of his life at that particular time. Meese's grandson, Dick Lohan, suggested that Meese should buy the Farnsworth to come out here to convalesce and be with his home, you know, in this, you know, in the end of your life. And Meese said, I can't go back to that house. I have too many bad memories. It brings up too much anxiety. I won't go to the house. So unfortunately, he does not purchase the home again. As I said, we do have two bathrooms in a house for one person, kind of unusual. So this bathroom, again, being identical to the other bathroom, the only difference is the bathtub. So we have a bathtub here, but remember, how tall is Edith?
Oh, 6 feet tall, wow.
Look at where this head is on the shower. That is not for a 6 foot person. The proportions, it's proportional. Meese is not worrying about functionality so much as proportionality, so that everything has an equal portion. This countertop that you see here is actually the positive aspect of the negative storage that's in the living room. So you see this piece of travertine in the living room. This is the area behind what people think are cabinets. So in here, that creates the area for the countertop. In the core, in the interior core, which is directly on this side of the wall, that then is where the fireplace is. So it hides that aspect of the fireplace within the negative positive layout of the house.
So some of what they were having was a clash of literal art versus life, where she was saying, I live here, and he said, this is my art, this is my life, and it was a very...
I think that's a very good point. You can make that point very easily. Edith is seeing this as a place to come, relax, get away, enjoy herself, you know, read, write. But to me, this is a project. And it becomes probably the most recognizable Meesean project that he does. Again, especially residentially, because he does so little residential properties, so few. Now, he does lots of apartment buildings and condos and things like that, but private individual residences were very, very few.
The other most interesting house I've ever been in is the Laurent House in Rockford, a Frank Lloyd Wright place, which it's the opposite of this. She was 6 feet tall. He was in a wheelchair, and everything was designed at his size.
Right.
So at his, where it was going to be. So it really feels like that to me, only the opposite.
Right. So there's an interesting relationship between Meese and Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank Lloyd Wright obviously is older. He's more established. When Meese came to the United States, there was a huge banquet in New York that introduced Meese to the architectural community. Wright gets up to the podium and says, it's my privilege to introduce the United States to Ludwig Meese van der Rohe. He had nothing to do, with it. He was just asked to do the introduction type of thing. Although Meese was invited to Taliesin in Wisconsin. He went there. He was supposed to stay for a day. He was there for 3 days. On the way back, Wright took him to the Johnson Wax building that was under construction so he could see that. Meese was invited to come back, but never went back to Taliesin. in the beginning, the two of them are good professionals. They, you know, they like each other's work. There's a lot. As Wright ages, Wright becomes more and more. He moves away from modern architecture. He doesn't consider the Prairie style modern. It's a Prairie style. And he's not happy with all this modernism that's happening around him and stuff. So he pulls away from the modern architects that are working at that time because he just doesn't feel that's the direction we should be going in. Also, the complete difference here is Wright's homes are all designed around a hearth. Everything is supposed to be toward the center where the family is. You have the open spaces, but you all go to the hearth. This home is designed the exact opposite. You're not centered on the interior. The interior is insignificant, basically. It's what's outside of you what is important. The interior is simply a way of viewing what you have outside. It's at an intentional elevation, 5'3". That's because when you view, if you view for the south wall, you're going to see an equal proportion of land, a third sky, a third river and bank, and a third ground. When you look out the front windows, your sight automatically goes to the shoreline on the other side because that is directly in half of what you see between the walls. Walls are 9'3" in height. They're 10'6" in width of 1/4-inch, currently tempered glass. Originally, all the glass was plate glass. But we recently did a huge renovation. We replaced 8 walls. So we currently only have 2 original walls in the home. The rest of them are now tempered glass as compared to sheet glass or plate glass. Again, remember also, it's for weekend use. Yeah. This is a country house. It's, you're not supposed to live here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. First off, there's no washer or dryer. I mean, it's just, there's no reason for it. It's a country house. You take your clothes home and wash them and bring them back when you come back out. Yeah. Mies had a full-time maid and a cook, so I don't think she was doing her own laundry, so I don't think she had to worry too much about that. But yeah, it's, you know, you can't, I think if you try and stay in the house longer than just a couple of days, then it can start to be a little bit problematic because you're thinking of those things. Where if you're out here just for a few days, one or two people for a weekend or, you know, a quiet evening or something, incredible, absolutely incredible, the experience of being out here. We're out, you know, folks, we're out in Plano. We're in the middle of nowhere. Our skies at night are incredible. We don't have ambient lighting around us. We don't have stores. We don't have anything else. So the sky is incredible at night. It's just lit beyond compare. The stars are absolutely incredible.
And that's kind of the huge irony, too, of the whole thing, is she built this to be able to get away from everyone and right. Be alone, but then the house itself ended up attracting
a lot of people. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that is kind of another juxtaposition where, yeah, she was trying to get away from everybody, and then they start showing up on her doorstep,
yeah.
More or less. That wasn't, you know, it's not like she put up with that every single weekend. It's okay. Not like, you know, there's constantly 10 or 15 people around the house.
Right.
But it is something she would have to contend with when she was here. When she's not here during the week, it was easy to get access to the house. It was a split rail fence. You could walk right up to the house. There was no alarm systems or anything like that. But when Edith was in residence, that was completely different. Then she was concerned about people being around the house and coming up to the window or bothering her. Just, you know, she's trying to relax. It's her property. And then all of a sudden, you know, these people start showing up, poking their noses in the window. Understandable, but extremely rude and inconsiderate for a woman who's trying to relax.
Yeah, but
it is. So,
but don't try it yourself, listeners.
So here's the thing. Mies, in 1946, Philip Johnson did a retrospective of Mies's work at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art. As part of that project, he asked Mies to send him the model of this particular home. So the home is already kind of famous within the architectural community before it's even constructed. I mean, this is before anything goes into the ground. People know Mies is already a recognized architect. What's he doing? This is a new project. Why is he doing that? It's a house? It's made of glass? What's going on out there? So yes, there was this kind of draw that, you know, this is a very unique aspect out here. So it drew a lot of people out of curiosity, and it still draws a lot of people out of curiosity.
Yeah. Well, we have circled the house now. We've been around the inside. Thank you so much. We've got to let some other people get to your great stories, too.
I'm glad you guys came out to visit us. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Maybe last question. Is there a website, a place people can find all the info? And,
absolutely.
And to come out here?
EdithFarnsworthHouse.org. So when I told you we were adding Edith back in, before the house was always called the Farnsworth House. It had no Edith. We did rename the home a number of years ago because to bring Edith back in. So the official name of the home now is the Edith Farnsworth House.
So you've got to check out the Edith Farnsworth House for yourself, as well as its visitor center and its art gallery. And since this was a crossover show with Jason Kregear's Community Spotlight, make sure you catch his piece about a fascinating art exhibit there. You can find it at WNIJ.org. Thanks to all of the wonderful folks at the Edith Farnsworth House for sharing their time and their stories with us. Sorry, Dan Libman, you missed out on this one. But we've got a new Under Rocks podcast the last Thursday of every month. Where do you want to send us next? Send your ideas to rocks@niu.edu, and we'll meet you there.